its interventions and are experiencing chaos as a result. In recent years, there has been growing recognition of the militarization of U.S. foreign policy in Africa, especially following the establishment of the Africa Command in 2007. Despite its years-long military presence in Africa, the U.S. has not only failed to combat extremists and terrorists, but has also been involved in coups and the overthrow of several governments. Since 2008, U.S.-trained African military officers have attempted at least 9 coups in 5 Western African countries. According to a report, 8 such coups, which took place in Burkina Faso, Guinea, Mali, and Mauritania in different years, were successful. The failed coup was in Gambia in 2014. Confirmation is reported from the U.S. Africa Command that several African military leaders who staged coups in their countries participated in AFRICOM's flintlock exercises. Since 2015, 5 coups have been carried out by military leaders who had previously participated in Special Operations Command Africa flintlock exercises. The U.S. Department of Defense claims that these exercises, which were first conducted in Africa in 2005, are intended to strengthen the capacity of African countries to fight terrorism. But are they? Despite their claims, Americans have only been harbingers of more coups and more instability in Africa.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The limelight.
After suspicious explosions in the Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2 pipelines, which deliver Russian gas to Europe in late September, all Russian authorities unanimously called the explosions an act of sabotage and terrorism, and announced that these attacks wouldn't have been possible without the involvement of at least one Western government. Calling these acts of sabotage, state-sponsored terrorism, officials in Kremlin said the United States and Britain's intelligence agencies are responsible for these explosions. Concerning this issue, we take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Reuters news agency has more for us. The Russian Ministry of Defense stated that Britain's Royal Navy officials took part in the planning and implementation of a terrorist attack on the Nord Stream gas pipeline network in the Baltic Sea on 26th of September. The Russian Ministry of Defense said in a statement on Saturday, 29th of October, according to the obtained data, Britain's Navy representatives took part in planning, organising and carrying out the terrorist attack in the Baltic Sea on 26th of September this year to blow up the Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2 gas pipelines. In late September, the suspected explosions occurred at 3 of the 4 strings of the Nord Stream 1 and 2 underwater pipelines, built to carry a combined annual 110 billion cubic meters of Russian gas to Europe under the Baltic Sea. The bombing halted gas deliveries to Germany ahead of the winter season, prompting a gas price hike and a scramble for alternative sources of fuel in the European Union. The Swedish and Danish authorities suspected that the incident was a result of sabotage, with both countries barring Russia from investigating the attack. The Russian Prosecutor General's office classified the pipeline blast as acts of international terrorism. According to Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova, the investigation of terrorist attacks can only be considered reliable and objective if Moscow takes part in the probe. The operator company, the Nord Stream AG, later said the damage to the pipeline system is unprecedented. Russian President Vladimir Putin stated that it was a deliberate assault on Europe's energy infrastructure, hinting that the United States and Britain could have been involved in the blasts. A joint venture by the Russian energy giant Gazprom and four Western European energy companies, Nord Stream 2, is a 1,230-kilometre twin gas pipeline along the bottom of the Baltic Sea, which complements the existing Nord Stream 1 network. Construction on the Nord Stream 2 was completed in September of 2021, but Germany delayed its operational certification and halted the process indefinitely in February of this year, shortly before Russia launched its special operation in Ukraine. The RIA Novosti news agency has more for us. Russian President Vladimir Putin stated recently that terror attacks on the Nord Stream pipeline system sought to cut off cheap energy sources from the European continent, undermining European energy security. Vladimir Putin stressed at the Russian Energy Week forum, he said, "And who is behind the sabotage at Nord Stream? Obviously, those who seek to finally break the ties between Russia and the European Union. Those who want to finally undermine and finish off the political sovereignty of Europe, weaken its industrial potential, and take over the market." The Russian president said the energy crisis was caused by Western policies, not by the start of the Russian special operation in Ukraine. He said, "The fuel and energy complex are going through, frankly, an acute crisis associated with unstable price dynamics of energy resources, an imbalance in supply and demand, as well as clearly subversive actions of individual market participants who are guided solely by their own geopolitical ambitions," adding that competitors are forcing Europeans to buy energy for higher prices. According to Vladimir Putin, the spot pricing model, which was pushed by the European Union, will bring the bloc $300 billion in losses. Putin added, "According to expert estimates, in the current year alone, the spot gas pricing mechanism will bring losses to Europe in the amount of more than 300 billion euros, or about 2% of Eurozone gross domestic product GDP. This could have been avoided if long-term OPEC contracts had been used." Moscow has been investigating the pipeline incidents as acts of international terrorism, while officials of the European Union also said the gas link was sabotaged. Russia has hinted that the United States and Britain may have been involved in this act of sabotage. The Sputnik news agency has more for us. Russia's Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak said recently the masterminds of the Nord Stream terror attacks plunge Europe into energy poverty. Alexander Novak told the Russian Energy Week, "As for Europe and its energy security, what happened to the Nord Stream pipelines has actually nullified its energy security. That is, the masterminds and perpetrators of this terror attacks simply plunge Europe into energy poverty." Alexander Novak's remarks came hours after reports that Sweden, Germany and Denmark had refused to jointly investigate the act of sabotage at the pipelines, each pledging to investigate the attacks independently. Sweden is said to have pulled out from the joint investigative team, followed by Denmark. The German Interior Ministry told a recent briefing that The federal policies finished establishing the circumstances of the sabotage at the Nord Stream network, which runs under the Baltic Sea from Russia to Germany. In the meantime, the Russian side has emphasized that it will not recognize the results of the investigation into the acts of sabotage unless Russian experts are allowed to partake in the probe. The Russian Foreign Ministry stated if Russian experts are denied access to the ongoing investigation, Moscow will assume that Denmark, Sweden, and Germany have something to hide or provide a cover-up for the perpetrators. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov told reporters on Thursday, 29th of September, "The Nord Stream incident looks like a terrorist act on a state level." Peskov added, "It is very difficult to imagine that such a terrorist attack could have taken place without the involvement of some state."
Economic divide.
France saw one of the biggest protests of the year, where over 100,000 protesters came out to protest inflation and the cost of living. This came on the back of petrol stations that had ran dry on petrol. Even though the situation may have been eased for now, the demands of the protesters are still out there, unanswered when it comes to things like higher salaries. But the size of the protest has been said to be maybe a spark for other European countries to come out and protest strike action. Hi, I'm Kavita Wei. Welcome to Economic Divide. Coming up in this program, large-scale protests. Energy costs is one of the reasons for that. That happened in France. And the lack of fuel at the pumps was something that affected the economy. How bad is the French economy? Well, when it comes to the economy, you're looking at pay rises not keeping up with inflation. That's something that Macron has to deal with. Also something that plagues many European countries, the cost of living overall. Then comes the 2023 budget. Why did Macron have to ram that through? That's the key question. And then we will take a look at the economic crisis gripping Europe. Inflation, you heard that before, energy prices, plus a harsh winter coming up. How is Europe going to cope?
As the war in Ukraine continues to drag on, the economic crisis triggered by the war has pushed citizens in different countries to stage protests against rising costs of living across the continent. In France, people have marched in the cities across the country to protest against the cost of living crisis, fueled by soaring inflation. Police have clashed with the protesters, venting anger in the capital, Paris. Protesters are demanding pay hikes to cope with rising prices of essential commodities. In Germany, pilots of Lufthansa's Eurowings began a three-day strike, affecting tens of thousands of the budget airline's passengers. Various strikes and industrial actions are set to take place in other European nations against the worsening economic conditions across the continent. Anti-NATO sentiment is also running high. The Ukraine war has caused a severe energy crisis in Europe, triggering anti-NATO sentiments among Europeans.
In terms of the online post for this topic, which involves France and other European countries, there's no denying the fact that people are angry and worried about how their lives are going to be, especially with winter coming up. So let's start with France and then move into the wider European area. This particular post is one online which said France aims to shield bigger companies as recession fears are deepening in Europe, in which the ECB, the European Central Bank president, acknowledged growth will slow substantially as Paris promises additional aid for energy bills. He said he would push to double the state aid available for industrial companies and other medium-sized businesses who are struggling with energy bills to up to 100 million euros. Adding, the measure requires sign-off from Brussels, but a 3 billion pot already earmarked for helping companies will actually be rolled into the year 2023. Now, Macron has accused the U.S. of trade double standards is one thing we figured we should look at, coming amid energy crunch, where the French president slammed U.S. trade and energy policies for creating a double standard with Europe as resentment builds over the economic price that the continent is paying over the conflict in Ukraine. The North American economy is making choices for the sake of attractiveness, which Macron said, I respect, but they create a double standard with lower energy prices domestically while selling natural gas to Europe at record prices. Severe economic slowdown awaits Europe as energy crunch bites is our next post. The Eurozone faces the largest downward revision in the world, with overall growth expected at 0.3%, as opposed to the 1.6% forecast in June. The OECD also anticipates Europe's largest economy, Germany, to suffer a recession in the year 2023. Next, EU inflation smashes historic high. Surging food and energy costs have continued to drive prices higher across the bloc, in terms of the data that was a study for this. It said price growth in the EU surged to 10.9% year-on-year in September, marking a new record high across the 27-member bloc, adding the annual inflation rate in the Eurozone, a subset of the EU comprising of the members, the 19 members that use the euro as their currency, increased to 9.9% in September. That's a jump from August 9.1% and last year's 3.4%. So there you have it. You can see that the sentiment is not that high when it comes to what is happening across Europe, not only France, but other European countries. Let me bring in our guest for the first segment of our Q&A, Pierre-Emmanuel Thamen, who's a geopolitical analyst, joins us. Pierre-Emmanuel Thamen, welcome to Economic Divide. We've had these strikes that were held in France, really big strikes, over 100,000 showed up. Obviously, in terms of inflation and the cost of living, that's the number one worries that they have on their mind, causing headaches for millions, the petrol shortage that occurred. How bad is the French economy doing since these strikes were so massive in numbers?
I think there are many different factors, but of course, the crisis in Ukraine and the decision to not to import or to reduce imports from Russia is in terms of petrol and gas is having a huge impact on the economy everywhere in Europe, but also there are internal decisions made by the French government which led to this situation. So this is a combination of factors. In France, you have a tradition of strikes, and when workers are unhappy, they strike. They go to strike because the unions are very weak, and the only solution to obtain some concession for the salaries and social conditions is to go to the street.
That explains why the French like to strike. Okay, that was our guest, Pierre-Emmanuel. Let's bring in Clive Menzies. Clive Menzies is a political economic researcher and analyst who joins us from London. Clive Menzies, welcome to Economic Divide. You have these protests against the rising costs of living that's happening, basically emanating from the energy crisis that has translated into inflation. Many are angry about the government's waging a war at the same time. That this is going on because they feel like the U.S. is in the lead, leading them down, especially when it comes to sanctioning Russia, obviously. When will European politicians come to their senses and say enough is enough, especially when it comes to the Ukraine conflict?
Well, I think what people are beginning to realize in growing numbers is that their governments have been lying to them for a long time about many things. Not least the causes of energy price rises and cost of living rises. What we're looking at in Ukraine is an existential war for Russia, but it is NATO that is actually waging this war using the proxy of the Ukraine. And the people that are suffering, apart from people across Europe because of the sanctions, are the Ukrainians themselves who are being used as pawns in this proxy war by NATO.
It is time now for the InfoNews section of the program. The first item that we looked at relates to the country of Sri Lanka. Now, if you think that inflation is bad in other countries in the world, look at Sri Lanka's economy, what it's suffering from in terms of inflation, hitting a record 73.7%. That's right. Well, the central bank of that country has said that inflation in the island nation is peaking, but price rise is likely to ease this month. So that's somewhat of good news for that country. Next up, taking a look at an issue that's been plaguing this Ukraine conflict in terms of the efforts by the West, and that's a price cap, where that's still in the works, or not, because in this case it hasn't worked. EU has failed to agree on cap on gas prices after their 11-hour summit. At least 15 EU countries want a cap on surging prices amid public anger over the cost of living. But Germany is resistant on that, so that raised a question mark there as to why Germany is resisting that. That's a good topic to dive into. Next up, taking a look at the supply of gasoline in the U.S. Well, not that they have a lot. I mean, they do, but they're plowing through the reserves. The U.S. president has released another 15 million barrels of oil from their strategic reserve just weeks before the U.S. midterms. Explains why he did it. He has moved, this move that he has done completes a previously announced release of, guess what, 180 million barrels. Of course, this comes amid the Ukraine conflict. And in line with that news somewhat is the recession that is or is not occurring in the U.S. Some say it is, some say it isn't. Well, Jeff Bezos, I'm sure you've heard of him, has issued a dire warning for the U.S. economy. He said that Americans should brace for a painful downturn. Surging inflation is causing too much pain, and according to him, that is due to the fact that the U.S. is going to be suffering from a severe recession. Those were the topics we picked for this section.
Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Time now for the in-depth section of this program. Well, the economic situation in France has been said to be better than other European countries, but is that really the case? If it was, then why would tens of thousands pour into the streets demanding higher wages, for example, and protest their cost of living? Well, let's find out why that is. France's proposed budget for the fiscal year 2023. Looking at this as it keeps going, 305.5 billion euros. Yes, that figure was proposed. France's finance minister said the fight against inflation is the biggest priority. Now, the big question is, will that figure actually be constructive in that regards? What about spending? Well, we think that should be the biggest concern, not just inflation. For example, when it comes to state subsidies, France spends 45 billion euros on state subsidies. The explanation that it gives to keep energy costs down, that's how much money they spend on that. Just one of the things that they spend a lot of money on in terms of the budget. Moving on, this is why we think France needs to actually check on its spending. The debt-to-GDP ratio of France is one of the highest in the Eurozone. It comes in at 113.3%. Now, we want to put that next to two other factors here. The amount that it borrowed, for example, in the year 2021-22, 260 billion euros. Then we move on to a figure to overcome the budget deficit that it has. And that figure is 270 billion euros. Do you see anything wrong there? The amount needed to overcome the deficit is higher than the amount borrowed, 270 billion euros. So where will France get the money to actually spend on this? Well, let's move on and see what other factors are important when it comes to the French economy. The growth forecast is important. Now, these numbers are sure to shock you, given the little amount that it actually appears that it is forecasting. I mean, 1% is what France has proposed, France meaning the administration of Macron and their finance department. But the Bank of France has said, you know what, 1% is even too much. It has proposed 0.8%, which is a more realistic projection based on what they have said. Of course, that translates to a lot of money, but still, it's very little compared to the fact that France is one of the biggest economies in the top three of the Eurozone. Next sector of the economy that needs a focus on is pensions. And herein lies a problem for Macron and also previous administrations. When it comes to deficit reduction, this cannot be achieved without pension reform. That's the bottom line on pensions. And the problem that France has, well, you can see 14% of that, of GDP, that is spent on public pensions. That's a lot, because when you take a look at the OECD average, it's only 8%. So obviously, there is a big problem for France to try to reform that. And finally, when it came to the budget, President Emmanuel Macron's government had to ram its 2023 budget through Parliament. What does that mean? That means it had to do that without a vote, after battling in vain for it to get approved by the fractured lower house of Parliament. That's right. He had to push that through. The loss of his overall majority is the reason for that. That happened in June on the legislative polls, which meant he could not get enough deputies to actually approve the package. Understandably, the opposition was not too happy. Okay, let's bring in, let's bring back Pierre-Emmanuel Thomann, geopolitical analyst, who rejoins us. Pierre-Emmanuel, welcome back. At the same time, the Europe is facing a rising populism. You got sanctions against Russia, obviously to have hurt the livelihoods there in Europe. The public demand for livelihoods will be used by far-right parties, as they have been, in terms of thrusting them into power. Don't you think that that's going to pose a threat to the overall European political system?
I think we are already in a systemic crisis. But for many years, this was the case, and it's increasing more and more and accelerates with this Ukraine crisis. Because within the European Union, actually, there are many disagreements between EU member states, more and more, and they are more and more fragmented. And this is why they want so much to appear united, although they are not, and they view the European project in different ways. And first of all, the systemic crisis of the European project, for example, is totally related with a systemic crisis in international relations of a global world order. More and more, there is a multipolarity which is emerging, and the West is defined as the United States and its main allies within NATO, and this group of countries, or governments, I would say, because the population are not that in line with the governments, is part of a systemic crisis as well. These Western countries don't accept multipolarity, and especially United States and EU and NATO, they want to reduce your acceleration of this multipolarity emerges with Russia, China, Iran, Brazil, South Africa, Saudi Arabia, having much more power on clout and refuse to align themselves on the main power, United States, which was enjoying the unipolar moment, until recently.
Okay, very well. Let me bring back Clive Menzies, political economy researcher and analyst from London, see what he thinks. Clive Menzies, along the same lines about how Europe is facing rising populism, you have these far-right parties and that are now thrust into positions. The public demand for livelihoods will be used by them to basically lead the country economically also. Wouldn't that pose a threat to the overall European political system?
Well, I think it's fair to say... to some extent, these words like populism and far right are manufactured by the media. Essentially, what we've seen over the last 120 years or so is the destruction of the nation state or the concept of the nation state. And what people are, when people decide that their country should not be ruled by people outside the country, effectively the UN and the EU, then that is described as populism or far right, whereas in fact a more accurate characterization is people wanting to take power back in order to control their own destinies.
Europe is facing a tough economic time. Inflation in the Eurozone has reached unprecedented levels. The latest data shows that inflation rose an average to 10.9% across the European Union. In August, that figure stood at 10.1%, and the annual inflation rate in the Eurozone was 9.9% in September, a jump from 9.1% in August. In the United Kingdom, the latest figures show that inflation hit 10.1% in September. The figure matches a 40-year high that was hit in July. The rising prices have pushed the European Commission to propose a 40 billion euro in aid to help small and medium-sized firms. High prices are also adding urgency for more rate hikes by the European Central Bank. Europe is now facing an energy crisis. According to authorities in Italy, electricity tariffs saw record growth last month, exceeding 136% on an annual basis. Rising energy costs have also pushed authorities in Germany to a 200 billion euro plan to combat the energy crisis.
We know that Europe's energy demand is very large, so it is logical that instead of outbidding each other, the member states and the energy companies should leverage their joint purchasing power. And for that, we propose today legal tools for pooling energy demand at European level.
That package includes relief measures like a gas price cap and a tax on windfall profits made by energy firms. The unprecedented crisis has now triggered concerns over the economic future of the Eurozone. It is now believed that the rising of far-right parties will cause further frictions and rivalries between EU states.
When it comes to the economies of Europe, there is a misunderstanding that their turmoil is due to the Ukraine conflict, but that is a misconception, something which we have stated before in our previous episodes. Even attributing the current European economic crisis to COVID-19 is a mistake. So then what is the problem, you ask? The answer may surprise you. EU foreign policy chief Joseph Borrell confessed the West's neoliberal economic model was based on cheap energy coming from Russia, access to the big China market and low-paid Chinese workers. Europe has now lost that and is thus in crisis.
So our prosperity was based on China and Russia, energy and market. You, US, takes care of our security. You, China and Russia, provide the basis of our prosperity. This is a world that is no longer there.
What Borrell, in essence, was saying, that sustaining this capitalistic model was made possible through China's cheap labor and production with cheap energy coming from Russia. The West's economic prosperity following the end of the first Cold War in 1991 was built on a neoliberal capitalist economic model that was only made possible due to the extraction of wealth from China and Russia, the European Union's top foreign policy official Joseph Borrell has confessed. Our prosperity was based on China and Russia energy and market, Borrell said. China provided the US and EU with a massive market, low-paid labor, and cheap consumer goods. And after the Soviet Union was overthrown, mass privatization in Russia and steps at integrating it into the West helped Europe secure huge amounts of inexpensive energy. The Ukraine conflict, however, has changed all of that. The EU's boycott of cheap Russian gas and oil have greatly increased the cost of living and doing business in Europe, making its products uncompetitive in global markets. This has plunged the capitalist system into a deep crisis, motivating the West, that is US and Europe, to wage a new Cold War on China and Moscow. The goal here would be to gain control over China's market and labor and Russia's natural resources. The EU's foreign policy chief acknowledged these facts in the 2022 Ambassadors Conference in Brussels on October 10th. They were reminiscent of comments made by French President Emmanuel Macron warning of what he called the end of a neoliberal era of abundance. It should be noted that Borrell is not too confident when it comes to the US. He said Europe's security policy was based on the United States and NATO, but the US is not a reliable security partner. He also said while Europe is no longer dependent on Russian energy, it is becoming dependent on US liquefied natural gas exports. This poses its own new security problem. He rounded off his speech by warning that the world is in chaos, and he named several main issues, like the NATO proxy war with Russia in Ukraine, the deep US-China competition, food and energy crises, and an impending economic recession. It is not just the proxy war in Ukraine that has destabilized Europe, Borrell said, but also the deep US-China competition. He acknowledged that the US government bears responsibility for the breakout of the war. That does it for this segment of the program. Hope you enjoyed it.
When it comes to Europe and its economies, the EU is really stuck between a rock and a hard place. I mean, it has shown that it is truly a vassal state of the U.S. in terms of the way that it's just following the U.S.'s lead. And this obviously is costing it dearly, from higher energy prices to, of course, inflation. Now, when it comes to France, the protests there that occurred, that should be a wake-up call for not only the French government, but all countries in Europe. If you recall, back in 2011, there was the Arab Spring. Are we witnessing a European spring now? Something to think about. That does it for this edition of the program. It was great having you with us. From Miko Vitapoy and the entire team, it's goodbye until the next Economic Divide.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
In the limelight.
The recent decision by OPEC Plus to reduce daily oil production has angered Democratic officials in the United States in the Biden administration. With the reduction of OPEC Plus daily production, the price of oil will rise, and it will also increase the price of gasoline in the United States. And this will reduce Democratic chances in the upcoming midterm elections this November. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The Sputnik News Agency has more for us. Coordinator for Strategic Communications at the National Security Council in the White House, John Kirby, claimed the recent OPEC Plus decision to cut oil production contradicts the talks between the Biden administration and Saudi Arabia on boosting oil output. John Kirby stated during a press briefing on Wednesday, 26th of October, he said, OPEC Plus decision to cut oil production certainly wasn't in keeping with the conversations that we were having with Saudi Arabia. John Kirby recalled that the United States discussed the issue with the Saudi leadership before and during President Joe Biden's visit to the Desert Kingdom last July, and there was an increase in oil production in the aftermath of his trip. OPEC Plus unanimously agreed in early October to decrease oil production by 2 million barrels per day starting in November, in response to uncertainty in global energy markets. Accusing Saudi Arabia of aligning itself with Russia, the Biden administration condemned the supply cut as short-sighted amid rising energy prices in the United States and Europe. Riyadh has rejected the accusations, saying that the decision to slash oil production was to stabilize the global market amid declining demand caused by a slowing of economies around the world. Also, several member states of OPEC Plus, the producer group consisting of organizations of the petroleum exporting countries plus its allies, expressed their endorsement of the recently agreed upon oil production cut after the United States accused Saudi Arabia of coercing others to support the move. The OPEC Plus decision has sharply angered US President Joe Biden, who threatened consequences for Saudi Arabia. Washington said the cut would boost Russia's foreign earnings. Saudi Arabia's defense minister and King Salman's son, Prince Khalid bin Salman, noted that the decision was unanimous. Khalid bin Salman's remarks were backed by ministers of several OPEC Plus member states, including Iraq. Iraq's state oil marketer, SOMO, said in a statement recently, "There is complete consensus among OPEC Plus countries that the best approach in dealing with the oil market conditions during the current period of uncertainty and lack of clarity is a preemptive approach that supports market stability and provides the guidance needed for the future." The United Arab Emirates also echoed the Iraqi and Saudi remarks, with the Emirati Energy Minister, Sohail Al-Mazrui, saying in a tweet, "I would like to clarify that the latest OPEC Plus decision, which was unanimously approved, was a purely technical decision with no political intentions whatsoever." The Reuters news agency has also covered the same story. The Biden White House claimed on Thursday, 13th of October, that Saudi Arabia pushed other OPEC Plus nations into an output cut recently, part of an escalating war of words between Washington and Riyadh. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby told reporters, "More than one OPEC member disagreed with Saudi Arabia's push to cut production and felt coerced into the vote." John Kirby said he was not going to identify the members to let them speak for themselves. Pushing against Riyadh's claims that the output cut was purely economic, John Kirby said in an earlier statement that the United States presented Saudi Arabia with an analysis showing there was no market basis for lower oil production before the OPEC Plus decision to cut output. The Saudi Foreign Ministry said in a statement recently, "The OPEC Plus decision was adopted through consensus, took into account the balance of supply and demand, and was aimed at curbing market volatility." John Kirby said in a statement, "The Saudi Foreign Ministry can try to spin or deflect, but the facts are simple," saying that cutting output would increase Russian revenues and blunt the effectiveness of sanctions against Moscow. The Biden administration's National Security Council spokesman, John Kirby, said the United States analysis also showed the cut could have waited until the next OPEC meeting after the November U.S. midterm elections that will determine whether President Joe Biden's Democratic Party will remain in control of Congress. Russia Today has also covered the same story. Saudi Arabia's energy minister, Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman, criticized nations for tapping their emergency oil stockpiles in order to manipulate prices and warned of consequences if the reserves run dry. The Saudi minister told the Future Initiative Investment Conference in Riyadh on Tuesday, 25th of October, "It is my profound duty to make clear to the world that losing emergency stocks may be painful in the months to come." He noted that the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve was not intended to relieve price pressures, but instead was meant to address emergency supply constraints. The comments come after U.S. President Joe Biden announced the sale of another 14 million barrels from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve of the United States following the release of 180 million barrels of oil since April. Recently, the U.S. authorities said they would release additional crude from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to keep a lid on America's gasoline prices and then replenish the reserves. The historic use of emergency stocks has worried investors around the world as excessive volumes of oil could flood the market and put it under pressure. According to an oil analyst at Energy Aspects, Amrita Sen, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve now absolutely being used to keep prices lower, even though that's not what it's meant to be used for. The Biden administration has reportedly indicated that further tapping of the strategic reserves could be linked to the recent decision by OPEC Plus to cut oil production.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith based on understanding. Saturday, the 4th of Ramadan, 1394, 21st of September, 1974. Indeed, in the creation of the heavens and the earth and the alternation of night and day, there are signs. The Quran, Surah 3, verse 190. For whom? For those who do not observe? For those who do not think? Of course not. For those who possess intellects. For those who have the power of thought and understanding. Now, this would be all people, if everyone used the mind that Allah has given them. Otherwise, from the moment they were born, those with intellects would enjoy a special peace of mind, and we would say, we are not of them, and we can never be of them. Those with intellects and these are or those. No, when God says possessors of intellect, this means all people. All the people in the world today possess intellects, as long as they use this gift that Allah has given them. Just as if you buy a car and keep it in the garage without ever getting in and driving it. Then, sometime later, you turn the key in the ignition and see that it doesn't start. You inspect the car, maybe it is corroded or maybe the battery has gone flat. But this isn't the fault of the car. It's your fault for not using it and taking care of it. So those with intellects are those who actually make use of the minds that Allah has given them in order to become wise.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. nations should be united.
So, who are those who possess intellects? The Ulul Albab. Now, pay attention to how the Quran addresses this question, because it uses a very subtle approach when it wants to say who those who possess intellects are and who the wise ones are. If these were ordinary people it was describing, it would say those who possess intellects are those who get ahead in whatever they do, who are never duped in business, in politics, in competitions, in confrontations, in professions. Whatever they do well. But the Quran doesn't accept any of these ploys, because the real value the human being has is not through any of the above, but through his connection with God. Therefore, the Quran describes those who possess intellects in terms of their relationship with Allah. And according to the Quran, those who possess intellects are the ones who are concerned with this highest of values more than anyone or anything else. Those who remember Allah. This is the mark of someone who has an intellect. They remember Allah, standing, sitting, and laying on their sides. The Quran, Surah 3, verse 191. In other words, in every circumstance, they remember. However, remembering Allah here does not refer to the mystical trance-like state of the dervish that some people crave. Always remembering Allah, always chanting, Hu. But that is not what we mean.
You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Palestinians rallied in the blockaded Gaza Strip to express their solidarity with people in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank. Israeli forces have stepped up their crackdown, carrying out attacks across the occupied territories and the city of Al-Quds in recent weeks. This while more than 130 Palestinians have been killed by regime forces in the West Bank this year alone, amid an increase in armed resistance. Palestinian resistance factions have expressed their unwavering support for Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds.
As we stand here, we affirm the unity of the Palestinian people in the face of the Zionist enemy. Palestinian resistance factions will always stand by our people in Al-Quds and in the occupied West Bank in the face of Zionist crimes. We will continue our armed resistance until the liberation of Palestine.
While Israeli forces increase their attacks in the occupied West Bank, extremist Jewish settlers have been violating the sanctity of Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Al-Quds under the silent, watchful eye of the international community.
Today we are sending a message of solidarity to our brethren in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank. The armed resistance will only increase for the sake of Al-Aqsa Mosque and Al-Quds. The Zionist occupation only understands the language of force, and we will continue the fight until martyrdom or freedom.
During the rally, Palestinian resistance groups warned the Israeli regime against violations in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank, while asserting that armed resistance is the key to freedom.
We are loyal to armed resistance and to the blood of martyrs who sacrificed their lives for the sake of liberating Al-Quds. We are fighting for a just cause, and nothing will break the resistance against the Zionist enemy. The criminal Zionist enemy has committed crimes against the Palestinians in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank, and it will pay for the crimes.
Palestinians say they want the occupied West Bank to be part of a future independent Palestinian state with Al-Quds as its capital.
People here vow to utilize all forms of resistance to defend Al-Quds against Israeli aggression. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
Earlier this month, Brussels approved the eighth round of sanctions on Russia over the conflict in Ukraine in an attempt to deprive Moscow of billions of euros in revenues from selling products in the European Union. In a previous round of sanctions, the sixth, Brussels had approved an embargo on Russian seaborne oil that will come into force on December the 5th. This punitive measure will severely affect the ISAB refinery, located on Sicily Island in the south of Italy. The refinery, owned by the Russian multinational energy corporation Lukoil, used to buy about 40% of its feedstock from Moscow. Due to the embargo, the plant could shut down in a few weeks, leaving thousands of people jobless.
These workers have been on permanent employment contracts for many years. They are very worried about what lies ahead. A closure of the refinery would reverberate on the region's satellite activities, affecting about 10,000 workers. We have received assurances from the new government that a positive solution will be found.
Although Lukoil was not singled out by EU sanctions, the ISAB plant, which accounts for around 20% of Italian refining capacity, has been forced to rely solely on Russian oil since international banks are no longer providing the refinery with credit to buy oil from alternative suppliers.
Per quanto riguarda queste sanzioni sul petrolio,
EU financial sanctions usually contain derogation provisions which allow competent authorities to authorize activities that would otherwise be prohibited. These provisions should be immediately applied to the ISAB refinery case. This embargo on Russian oil will only have the consequence of further damaging the EU's energy market.
A last shipment of Russian oil is expected to reach the ISAB refinery by December the 5th. The Italian government has a bit over a month to find a solution to the issue. There seems to be two ways only to avert the closure of the ISAB plant. Either the refinery gets nationalized and the Italian government is reportedly mulling over this option, or it is sold to non-Russian buyers. Some media have reported that US private equity fund Crossbridge is among parties interested in buying the refinery. Actually, there is also a third option that could work for ISAB. Continue the same way as today. But that would imply a normalization of ties between the EU and Russia, an option that seems non-viable at this stage. Max Civili, Rome.
Rohingya refugees in the suburbs of New Delhi are being threatened by a new onslaught against the community. They claim some men have attacked and beaten women and children living in the refugee camp. One of the women is critically injured and being treated in the hospital. Local residents claim refugee children had blocked a narrow road in the locality, while the members of the Rohingya community maintain they have nowhere to go. Meanwhile, the city police filed a complaint and an investigation is underway.
It's the government that sent us here after our camp was burnt down mysteriously. Our children have nowhere else to play or go. This is not the first time we have been beaten up. We don't want any trouble as we are already facing a lot of misery. Our children don't even have the privilege to go to school. What other options do they have?
India is home to some 40,000 Rohingya refugees based on official figures, but reports suggest there are hundreds of thousands living across many parts of the country. Recent expulsion drives from the government have forced many to go into hiding in undisclosed locations, fearing detention, deportation, and separation. The Indian government in recent years has taken the issue of these refugees to the parliament, with majority of the members calling them a security threat and therefore demanding their deportation. Rights activists have time and again reminded the administration about their plight, urging them for an immediate halt to any deportation plan.